The views of this program are not necessarily the views of KJLL Radio, its management, or its sponsors. The host is solely responsible for its content. Enjoy.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure.
Direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
The Fred and Jeff Show.
And welcome, Tucson. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my brother, Jeff.
Hola, everybody.
Welcome to the big show. And we have a very germane topic for...
German?
Germane.
Wow, Fred, that's a big word for you.
It is. I'm very proud of myself. So, yeah, we have a very interesting topic today, especially with the weather the way it is and people who... are going out and enjoying this beautiful Tucson summer. And we're going to have a lot of fun with it. We have to thank our sponsors.
We do. The first person that I want to say hello to out there, because I used to do a lot of shout outs to my friends and family, but I want to say hi to Ellie Doucette. Welcome back to Tucson, Ellie. And I want to thank our friends Barker Morrissey, the guys at Barker Morrissey Contracting, Casa de la Luz Hospice, H&S Estate Garden, the Monkey Burger, the Coleman Brothers at Mayfield's Florist, the ladies of Power Women Investing, and your friends at Ronstadt Insurance.
Yeah, and one of our sponsors, actually we sort of have a reciprocal relationship with, are the lovely ladies of the Tucson Roller Derby.
That's right.
Unfortunately, Bambina, who is the new PR person, couldn't make the show today. She took over for Chase Spanks, who our listeners are used to. But there's a big bout this Saturday, the Saddle Tramps versus the Texas Pistols, and that's going on August 6th, the Saturday.
Yeah, Fred, it's roller derby is not as fun listening to you describe it.
Yeah,
it's having the girls here in the studio. it's just not as fun.
But you know, we still big fans, and the bout is actually a doubleheader. There's the Tucson Roller Derby Saddle Tramps, which is their travel team. And they're up against the El Paso Tex Pistols. And there's also a Rocky Horror versus Rocky Balboa Expo game.
See, and I want to know more about that. Can you tell me more about that, Fred?
No, I can't.
Ugh.
But I can tell you that it's this Saturday at the Bookman Event Center, which is 5120 South Julian Drive near Palo Verde and I-10. And their charity that has been going on all this month is... The Old Pueblo Children's Services.
That's awesome.
And they take care of kids from 12 to 17 who they just are kids in need. And any donation of a gently used or new books, shoes, or clothing appropriate for a 2 to 17-year-old is appreciated. And I think, don't hold me to this, and I'll probably get beat up if I'm wrong, but I think if you bring stuff for a 2 to 17-year-old, that you'll get a raffle ticket. And they have great raffles at Tucson Roller Derby.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And
I understand the thing to do after you go see the girls at the Tucson Roller Derby is go to the Surly Wench.
Is to hang out at the Surly Wench.
Yeah, it gets a little crazy.
And actually, you can get tickets to the Surly Wench, I think Red Garter, online at TucsonRollerDerby.com. I think there's a couple other places, but I think those are the primary places to get your tickets.
Very cool. And I got a little housekeeping. For those of you folks in Tucson that belong to the Reed Park Zoological Society, good for you. Because this Sunday, they are having the Ice Cream Safari. The Ice Cream Safari at the zoo, it's Sunday the 7th from 4 to 6. It is a family activity for all the zoological members. And it's an all-you-can-eat ice cream treats while all the ice cream lasts. And so, folks, I got to tell you, if you are not a member of the Tucson Zoological Society, you got to join. So, go to their website, Google Tucson Zoological Society.
And it's fairly inexpensive. I mean, it's like...
Absolutely.
I think it's less than $50 for a family for a year.
And then you get in. Every time you go to the zoo, there's no charge. You just show them your zoological
and they have all sorts of events all year long.
That's right.
Just like this.
The zoo lights. They've got the ice cream social. So this is one of the really cool things about the zoo. And unfortunately, you know, we lost a giraffe at the zoo. So that was very tragic. But... the zoo is a great, 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 great place to go. Please go out and support those guys. They do fabulous work for Tucson. So remember, the Reed Park Zoological Society, become a member, go out to the event this weekend and enjoy yourself. Take the kids, the grandkids, have a great time.
Oh, and you know what? I forgot something. The first caller, actually, caller number three, I like caller number three, at 529-3508, will get a pair of tickets to the Tucson Roller Derby bout this weekend.
Perfect.
So give us a call at 529-3508, caller number three. You'll get a pair of tickets to Tucson Roller Derby. And when we come back from the break, we'll be talking to our special guest and join some...
Yeah, stick around. We'll be talking about rattlesnakes. So stick around for the rest of the Fred and Jeff Show here in lovely Tucson. See you in a minute.
Suffer from irrigation leaks, a broken sprinkler, leaky valves, or you just can't find the problem? At H&S Garden, we provide high quality, reliable service at reasonable prices. Our repair technician has over 25 years of experience. And if you hate pulling weeds, raking mesquite beans, or trimming those thorny bushes, just leave the dirty work to us. We're licensed contractors with 30 years of experience in landscape management. Our crews are professional and take pride in their work. We'll meet you on site to establish a program that works for you. Call today at 293-6488 or visit us at hsgarden.com. H&S Garden, a family-owned and operated Tucson small business.
What's a monkey burger?
A simple, well-made burger, cooked to your choice.
Why monkey burger?
We called it that because come see our art on the walls. It tells a story. Monkey burger, where it's impossible to be a food snob, even if they do serve wine, beer, as well as Tucson's best burger. 514-9797.
Just drive right past Olive Garden on Broadway in Craycroft and park in front of Monkey Burger.
Thank you for calling Huge Conglomerate Insurance. Your call is somewhat important to us. Please hold, and we'll be with you as soon as we can.
When you get sick or injured, the first call you make is to your neighborhood doctor. Shouldn't the next call you make be to your local insurance representative? Skip the hours waiting on hold to ask a simple question about what your insurance policy will cover.
Your current wait time is 45 minutes.
Instead, call Ronstadt Insurance at 721-4848 and get the attention that you deserve. Trust local, trust Ronstadt Insurance. Pioneers in good service.
Visit the Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
And welcome back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show, and this is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my brother Jeff. We're broadcasting from the lovely Jolt Studios on East Broadway Boulevard, looking out into the Catalinas and enjoying this fine, fine afternoon. Now, you know, we were out, Jeff and I were out tramping around in Vail this weekend.
Wow.
And
good time, Fred.
It was a good time.
You know, for listeners of the show who've heard you talk about hashing,
yeah.
I went on my first hash this weekend, and you went on your sixth, so you got your hashing name. But boy, what a good time.
It was great.
It was a good time.
It was a lot of fun. And the interesting thing about it is when we were like off way out in the boondocks.
Yeah, we were out there.
Lots of flora and fauna and lots of fun little creatures living out there too. So it's, you know, it's a timely thing that we have our guest on. Matt Good is from the School of Natural Resources and the Environment for the University of Arizona. He's a research scientist. Just had a big old conference about rattlesnakes and all sorts of reptiles, and we thought it'd be a great idea to have him on the show and talk about our scaly little friends out in the desert. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Nice to be here.
You can pull that microphone all the way down in front of you, Matt. There you go.
Okay.
Perfect.
How's that?
Perfect.
Okay.
Yeah. So our producer told us that we were in trouble today because you had a voice built for radio.
Yeah. Well, that's the first person who's ever told me that, but okay, I'll take it.
So, Matt, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Where are you from?
Well, I'm originally from Wyoming. I don't know, a lot of people. I'm the only person they've ever known who's originally from Wyoming. But So I grew up there, and I went to the University of Wyoming, and then I ended up, you know, getting into the field of biology and stuff, and that took me around, and I spent a couple years living down in the Caribbean, actually.
Really?
Yeah, on Aruba. And I studied a rattlesnake down there. And
there are rattlesnakes on Aruba?
Indeed, yeah. There's one particular rattlesnake there, the Aruba Island rattlesnake, funny enough. And so I was working on that animal. It's an endangered species.
Now, what do you mean you were working on that animal?
Well, I was studying it, trying to figure out how many were there, what they were doing, where were they moving, that kind of thing.
And how do you do that?
The primary way you do it is with radio telemetry. So I implant a radio transmitter into their body cavity.
Okay, so you got to catch them.
You catch them.
You inject them with a little transmitter?
Well, you actually do a surgery on them. You put it into their gut cavity, basically, into their salomic cavity, it's called.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you can track them around with a receiver and an antenna. So I've been doing that for a long time now. That was back in the 80s.
And how many did you get?
Well, we tracked only about six there, because we were kind of low on funding, but we ended up capturing over 140 of the snakes, and so we were able to determine that there was a decent, you know, population there and that kind of thing. And
so maybe not as endangered as everyone thought.
Yeah, they're kind of endangered sort of by definition, because the only place they occur in the whole world is on that island.
And what makes them different from any other rattlesnake?
They're unique because they evolved on this island. They're very white in color, which is kind of cool. Yeah, the island is it's a reef, you know, it's an inundated coral reef, so it's limestone, and it's quite bleached, I guess you could say, in coloration. So the snakes are also kind of bleached looking, so they'll match, you know, their background and hide that way.
Cool.
Yeah, it's an island off the coast of Venezuela, and I met a woman there.
Of course you did.
Yeah, I did. And
where else would you go to meet a girl? Hey, I'm from Wyoming, and I got to go to Aruba to meet a pretty girl.
Yeah, it's a pretty good story, but I don't know if I should tell it on the radio or not. But anyway, she was from the Netherlands, because it's a Dutch island.
Okay.
And now, what, 20-some years later, we're still happily married.
Oh,
and
congratulations. Yeah, yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
So you go from Aruba, studying the Aruba rattlesnake, to Tucson.
No, we went to Amsterdam, where my wife is born and raised, and I lived there for several years. And then we wanted to come check out the States, come back. She wanted to come check it out. I was sort of digging on the Netherlands. But anyway, we came back, and we moved to Arizona, and I worked for the Game and Fish Department on some research associated with actually collecting of snakes and lizards, that kind of thing. And then I ended up at the University of Arizona working with a really cool guy named Cecil Swalby over in the he's a herpetologist over in the natural resources program. And I've been here pretty much ever since.
And what year was that?
That would have been 94.
Okay. So you've been here 16, 17 years.
Yeah, a long time now, a lot longer than I thought I'd be anywhere, honestly.
And how do you like Tucson?
Oh, I love Tucson. I love the Sonoran Desert. To me, the Sonoran Desert is magical.
Now, of all the things you could study, why the rattlesnake?
You know, I started, when I first went to college, even though I was into snakes and things, not in any like rabid way like some people are, but just growing up in Wyoming, there was really not that much to do but go around and chase critters and stuff, you know? And,
sure.
Yeah.
We used to do that here, too.
Yeah.
Growing up in the foothills, we'd chase around horny toads and run away from Gila monsters.
Yeah, yeah, so, right. Well, there's still horn lizards out in the, right in the Tucson area. Well, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but then when I went to the University of Wyoming, I was actually an English major. And But I liked biology. I ended up doing both, actually, and then I had a work study position, and they had a job working with rattlesnakes, just sort of cleaning their cages out and stuff. And I did that, and I met up with this guy named Dave Duval, who was just this brilliant scientist, and he got me really interested in sort of the questions you could ask using rattlesnakes.
Like what?
Well, sort of evolutionary questions and things about their defensive behavior. How did it evolve? And exactly what kind of behavior do they do depending upon what predators they might encounter? And just all kinds of mainly behavioral stuff. And then later I started getting more interested in conservation. And so now the work I do is, it's still very strongly ecology-based work, even some of it evolutionary, but it's mainly looking at ways we can apply what we know about the snakes to conservation issues.
Okay. So, and I got a million questions about that, but, but let me take a step backwards. The evolution of the rattlesnake. What can you tell us about the evolution of the rattlesnake?
Well, one thing that's obvious of interest is the rattle itself.
Sure.
That's really obviously a very characteristic trait that rattlesnakes have. And we don't really know for sure why it evolved, but we think that the original sort of proto-rattlesnakes were probably in the Mexican Plateau area, central Mexico, and they lived in high elevation areas, and they were associated with things like rock slides and rocky areas, talus slides. And so imagine an animal like a coati or a bear probing down in there trying to get, you know, trying to get a hold of these snakes.
And, right.
Eventually, yeah. And then, you know, one snake that had sort of a hard tissue at the end of its tail could make some noise, and then it kind of went from there. The ones that didn't have that were eaten, and the ones that, I mean, I'm simplifying this a lot.
Well, but at the end of the day, it's Darwinism. The ones that were able to develop a noise to frighten them off, they lived.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so, and what kind of a time frame are we talking about here?
We're talking about, well, you know, we're at least over about a 2 million year period.
Wow.
And probably more than that. It's the fossil record's kind of difficult with some of these species, but that's probably around the time frame.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Now, are rattlesnakes sort of indigenous to North and South America, or are they sort of across the globe?
No, they're totally New World animals. So yes, they're North, South, and Central America. You do not find them in the Old World.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So how many types of snake? How many types of rattlesnakes do we have here in southern Arizona?
Well, it depends on who you ask, because...
Why is that?
Well, in the biology world, some people like to split out the animals into more species because they think that there are more different forms based on what they look like, how they behave, and mainly what their genetic makeup is.
Okay.
Other people tend to kind of lump them together into fewer species. So these are fights that people have. They're called taxonomists or systematists. They're people who actually study the evolutionary tree of life. And so based on characteristics that the animals have in common, they sort of group them into different categories or into different species.
Okay.
So, you know, there's one group of rattlesnakes, for example, that used to just be one species, the western rattlesnake. And that included the prairie rattlesnake, which you can find in a small part of Arizona. That included the Arizona black rattlesnake, which you can find up in the Catalinas. But they've lumped some of those together, and some of them they split. And so, for example, the Grand Canyon rattlesnake, they call it Crotalus abyssus, for the abyss of the Grand Canyon. That, by most people, would consider that its own species. Other people would consider that like a subspecies. So, again, I'm simplifying things.
Sure.
But there's a lot of interest and concern over exactly who's related to who, and it can actually play a role in whether or not the animal is considered endangered, because if it's lumped together with others,
There's
a greater number. Yeah, so that's basically how it works, but it's a lot more sort of complicated than that.
Okay,
but, yeah.
Well, let me ask you a goofy question then. What would be the difference between the black rattlesnake, say, and any other type
and
a prairie rattlesnake? Is it their length? Is that their feeding habits? I mean, what's different between one rattlesnake and another rattlesnake?
Quite a few different things. Even though those are obviously two closely related species, they live in completely different environments.
So is that it? It's the environment they live in?
That's one of the things. Another thing is their morphology, how they look. So the black rattlesnakes are dark, they're black colored.
Okay, they're coloring.
Yeah, not all of them are, but some of them are. And the prairie rattlesnakes tend to be more blotched, but you do find in Arizona black rattlesnakes that are also blotched, especially when they're younger, and they get blacker as they get older. They do feed on different things.
Really?
Yeah, because there's different prey available in their different environments.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And what would the black rattlesnake feed on? rabbits?
Well, they're not probably large enough to feed on an adult rabbit. They might feed on some young rabbits. They're high elevation animals. They live up at the top of the mountains around here. And so they're probably lizard and rodent eaters. Okay. A lot of these animals have not been well studied, snakes in general. Now, rattlesnakes tend to be a well-studied group of snakes. But even within that, a lot have not been studied intensively in the way we have a lot of mammals or bird species. We tend to know less about reptiles and amphibians than we do about, especially reptiles, than we do about, say, birds and mammals, which are kind of more, I think we identify with them more since we're mammals ourselves. And they're
a little bit less dangerous.
Yeah, a little less dangerous. Well, actually, not necessarily true, yeah, but
a bobcat,
right? Exactly, yeah. So they're kind of more charismatic, you know.
Yeah. They're prettier, right?
Exactly.
You want to go hang out with one of those as opposed to a snake,
right? But we do know more about big mammals than we do about little mammals, for example. So we like the big charismatic megafauna, they're called. So, yeah, and snakes kind of don't fall into that category. Although I do study. I'm lucky enough to study king cobras in India.
Whoa!
And we have
I did
an
see
ongoing...
that on your resume.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
How'd you do that? When did you do that?
Well, actually, I was invited to go over there and work on them with a guy named Ram Whitaker, who's a well-known Indian herpetologist, and he knew about my stuff, and he just thought it was interesting and the kind of stuff. And I had some techniques that he wanted me to bring over, so I sort of coordinate the science into things.
Okay, now. We have no time left before our break.
Okay.
But tell me, what do you mean techniques?
Well, like the telemetry implants, for example.
Okay.
Or
did you develop that?
No. That's been I started it very early on, though, in the history of telemetry as far as snakes are concerned. But it had been going on maybe 5 or 6 years before I started doing it in the early 80s back in Wyoming.
And how long do those little radios last inside a snake?
Depends on the size. Some of them, the ones we put in king cobras are 25 grams and they last, 3 years.
Wow.
But we put little ones in small snakes like twin spotted rattlesnakes, for example. That are only last maybe, 3 or 4 months.
And it's just because of the battery, the size of the battery, it wears out and it's done.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow, that's very cool.
Yeah,
very cool.
Thanks.
Yeah, well, what Fred is doing is saying 1 minute before we have to take a break.
Okay.
Doing hand signals.
So where was I going with that? So that's one of the techniques you used. What was another one that you brought to the Indian group?
Here's a cool one. We put in what are called eye buttons into the king cobras.
Eye buttons?
Yeah, they're little data loggers, and they log temperature so we can find out what the snake's body temperature is. That's real important for snakes because snakes are ectotherms. Which means they get their heat from their surrounding.
Okay, sure.
Some people call it cold-blooded, but that's not accurate because they're warm-blooded when it's warm,
Sure.
But anyway, so you put these little tiny miniature data loggers inside and you program them to take the temperature every so often, and they'll last for like a year. And then I put three in one king cobra, so when the one would run out, the next one would start up, so we could get a body temperature data from the snake.
That's very cool.
Yeah, so we were mainly interested in that for the female king cobras because they actually guard their nests. They're pretty cool animals, very charismatic.
All right, well, we're at the bottom of the hour. We got a news break coming up, so stick around after the news for the second part of the Fred and Jeff Show.
One day.
CNN Radio, I'm Michelle Wright. Topping our news, a discouraging report on consumer spending sent the market spiraling downward today.
An ugly day today, and you know what? This had a lot to do with what the broader economy is doing. The Dow down 265 points, the NASDAQ off 2.75%.
That's CNN's Allison Kosick. President Obama has signed a compromise plan raising the nation's $14.3 trillion debt ceiling, averting what could have been an unprecedented national default. The autopsy on Selena Cass, the 11-year-old New Hampshire girl who vanished from her bedroom, is finished, but the question on how she died remains.
At this time, both the cause and the manner of death remain pending.
Senior Assistant Attorney General Jane Young. The stifling heat has killed 11 people in Oklahoma and is causing several trees to wilt early, explains arborist Mike Forrest.
If it loses all its leaves and it goes totally brown, it's done.
And in Dallas, the city hit 100 degrees again today.
an idea is born, but your team lives worlds apart. No problem. Welcome to GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix, the easy way to meet online and face-to-face with high-definition video. Simply launch or join a meeting with one click from any computer, share screens in real time, and edit documents together. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and enter promo code 45. GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Try it free today.
I'm sure you're thinking, boy, I'd like to pay less for my car insurance, but switching seems like a lot of work. All the hassle and whatnot. Well, I'm here to tell you that is simply not the case. GEICO makes it so easy to switch and start saving money straight away without getting buried in a ton of paperwork. You know, that actually happened to me once. Literally, I was buried under my income taxes for 6 days. Haunting, really.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
They say when one door closes, another opens. For ING Direct customers upset their bank is getting sold, there's this, Ally Bank. Ally Bank offers great rates, an award-winning online savings account, and no monthly maintenance fees, just like you're used to. Plus, Ally has no ATM fees nationwide, innovative products like Raise Your Rate CDs, and 24/7 live customer service, where phone customer satisfaction is over 90%. Go to allybank.com or call 1-877-247-ALLY. Member FDIC.
As a home plate ump, my eyesight is my paycheck.
Strike one!
Strike, that thing was chin high!
But the price of monthly contact lenses was eating me up.
Strike two!
Come on, it bounced to the plate!
So to save some money, I'm just using these glasses I found. Cha-ching!
Strike three, you're out!
He hasn't even pitched the ball yet!
There's an easier way to save. Get online, go to GEICO.com, get a quote. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
At Barker Morrissey Contracting, our goal is to develop lasting relationships with each one of our clients. We measure our success on achieving that in the end. We offer the best possible combination of experience, integrity, and commitment available in Arizona. The foundation of our organization is a commitment to meet our clients' needs from pre-construction services through project build and move-in. We have experienced, cohesive project managers who thoroughly analyze each project prior to construction. We do this to provide value engineering at the front end of the project while reducing time-consuming change orders during construction. We are confident that our collaboration with you will result in a successful project that'll exceed your expectations. Barker Morrissey Contracting. Straightforward, honest, and reliable. Call us at 323-3831 to set up an appointment. That's 323-3831.
This is Lamont Hundley from Arizona Health with your Fred and Jeff Show fitness tips. When it comes to your personal exercise routine, balance should be the most important ingredient. It's easy to lose track of time during a workout. Often we end up doing more strength training, then your cardio gets shortened, and there's no time to stretch. Balance is always the key to fitness success. You need an accurate portion of cardiovascular and respiratory improvement exercises, strength training, and always stretch before or after the workout. Just as a balanced diet is important in your nutrition, a balanced workout would help you achieve greater results. For more information, please contact Arizona Health at arizonahealth.com. This has been Lamont Huntley with your Fred and Jeff Fitness Tips.
May I light that cigar for you, sir?
Thank you.
And welcome back. This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstein. I'm here with my lovely brother, Jeffrey, who's actually having conniption fits during the break.
Conniptions.
Because the Pirates are going down.
Dang it. It's the top of the third and they're down 8-2 to the Cubs.
But you know what, Jeff?
The Cubs.
Even if the Pirates lose, it'll be a good day if you can sit down and have a fine cigar from the Tinder Box.
Absolutely true. What's going on, Big Mike?
Hey, good evening, gentlemen.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys? Sorry about your Pirates, Jeff.
Yeah, it's just because you're a Tiger fan.
Well, yeah. That's okay. Pirates are having a great season this year.
Yeah, so far. Let's keep it going. Let's go, Bucks.
So when your favorite team loses or when your favorite team wins, what cigar will they be enjoying this week, Michael?
See, that's what's good about cigars. It's good if you're happy or sad. We've got a H. Upman. It's a new cigar. It's called the H. Upman 1844 Reserve, and I just got them in late yesterday afternoon.
Nice.
And they've got a Ecuadorian Cubano wrapper. It's got a Nicaraguan binder, and Dominican filler. It's a medium-bodied smoke, very well constructed, very tasty smoke. A lot of Upman makes, everything Upman makes is real good. So, and as usual, it's buy three, get one free.
Perfect. Now you said this is a new cigar. How long has it been on the market?
They brought it out. They were talking about it at the show, and Mark was in Vegas a couple of weeks ago and ordered some, and they just arrived yesterday afternoon, as a matter of fact.
Very nice. What's the flavor profile like?
It's medium. I smoked a little Robusto today, and tomorrow I'll probably have the Toro, and then I'll try the Churchill later. We've got them in three sizes, so it's a great little, the little Robusto I had was a great little smoke, real flavorful.
Wonderful. And the deal is you buy three, you get one free. And yep. If they want to pick up this spectacular deal, where do they head?
They need to come to 5350 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 124. And you can give us a call at 747-4807.
Yeah, I think Jeff might be heading over there after the show to have a little commiseration cigar.
It's now 10 to 2.
Ugh. Uh-oh. Sorry,
top of the fourth. Alfonso Soriano said two home runs. I can't stand it.
Yeah, well.
Well, the pirate baseball fan misery continues. So, all right. Well, Mike, thanks a bunch for the cigar tip of the week. And folks,
thanks, gentlemen.
Have a good one, Mike.
And on the other
you
side
too.
Of the break, we'll be back with Matt Good from the University of Arizona talking rattlesnakes.
Casa de la Luz is Spanish for House of Light. That's what one needs when facing a terminal illness. A House of Light to provide comfort, support, and experienced hospice care during the end-of-life journey. The mission of Casa de la Luz is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Founded in 1998 by Lynette Jaramillo and Agnes Poor, Casa de la Luz Hospice has become a leading provider of superior hospice care throughout southern Arizona. Whether it is in the hospital, at home, an assisted center, or a nursing home, the caring staff at Casa de la Luz will reach far beyond the usual and customary hospice service. Every service provided is a reflection of our commitment to our community. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Charlie's Comic Books, Tucson's Mightiest, is at a new location, the southwest corner of Speedway and Craycroft. Open 7 days a week, Charlie's is a full-service comic shop. New comics, back issues, all your collecting supplies, action figures, t-shirts, and more. No subscription too small. Shipping available. Call 320-0279. That's 320-0279. Or click on charliescomics.com. Charlie's Comic Books, Tucson's Mightiest.
Hi, I'm John Fina from Performance Footwear, and a lot of people think that after I finished playing pro football, my health insurance would not be an issue. Not true. So when I needed a great health plan for me and my family, I called the folks at Ronstadt Insurance. They hooked us up with the perfect policy from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona, and we couldn't be happier. So if you're shopping for health insurance, give my friends at Ronstadt Insurance a call at 721-4848. They'll be happy to help you. Oh, and when my mom and dad turned 65, my friend Jim at Ronstadt Insurance helped them find the right Medicare plan. Call the pioneers in good service at Ronstadt Insurance, and they'll help you buy the right policy the first time.
Ronstadt Insurance is a full-service insurance agency. Give us a call at 721-4848 or look us up online at ronstadtinsurance.com. Ronstadt Insurance is an agent authorized to sell health insurance plans from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
And welcome back. This is the Fred Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my brother, Jeff. And we're joined in studio by Mr. Matt.
Dr.
Matt Good. I should use proper titles.
Right. You've got a PhD.
No, I don't.
What? Oh, you're a PhD candidate.
Yes, I am.
Ah, soon to be doctor.
Wait a second. Yeah. You know, I was noticing that the CV and online, it's that you were expected graduation in May of 2009.
Yeah, that's been changed a couple of times. to the point where I'm getting letters.
Dear Mr. Good.
Yeah, even though I've been doing this for a long time, and I even have a faculty position, I may be the only one who has one that isn't actually a PhD.
Good for
and
you.
After you do it long enough, I guess they just get tired of it. But I am actually working
on it. Well,
you're
like old shoes, you know? Yeah, he is.
There you go. But I am actually working on it. But because I have so many projects going on, that it's taken a while.
Takes the back burner. All right, so the last part of the show, what we really, really want to dive in with you, and we've talked about your work in following snakes. You know, you've studied snakes all over Southern Arizona. You've studied snakes in India. You study snakes
around
the world. Mm-hmm. So tell us, you know, a couple of things that I want to know, and I hope our listeners want to know, is when you see a snake, when you see a rattlesnake sitting around, coiled up, you know, resting under something, moving across a road, what's going on? I mean, what should you do? Should you flip out and run and get a shovel to chop its head off? Should you, you know, hang out with it, try to catch it? I mean, or should you just let it go? Really, the question I want to know is what's the importance of the rattlesnake here? And when we encounter them, what should we do?
Well, you know, just like any animal, they're important to the way things work out there.
In what way, though?
Well, they serve as predators for all kinds of different prey items, like small rodents, for example. So, you know, rattlesnakes eat mice and they eat rats and things like that. And so other things eat rattlesnakes, you know, like hawks and skunks and coyotes and things.
Skunks eat rattlesnakes?
Yeah, skunks eat everything, as far as I can tell. They're very omnivorous.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're tough little guys. So, you know, they're just a part of the way things work out there. They're a part of how the ecosystem works. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you always hear that, but it's very, very true. If you start tinkering around with it, then things can happen which you don't want, you know. And so the more intact we can leave an ecosystem and leave all the parts in place, the better off we are.
Sure.
You know, it's like if you want to put the watch back together, make sure you save all the parts, you know. So it's kind of like that was an Aldo Leopold thing, right? So snakes are actually critical in desert ecosystems as well, because they can be really important predators for a lot of stuff. For example, I can give you a real obvious example of what happens if you take the predators out of a system, which we've done throughout North America.
Sure, with wolves and...
Yeah. What do we get? We get an overabundance of things like deer.
Right.
And then we get an overabundance of deer, and there's so many of them, they start to get more diseases, and the diseases spread quicker. And they cause damage to vegetation and crops and things like that. So,
sure.
Yeah, it's a real simple sort of food web kind of idea, but it's very important.
And so if we don't want to get overrun with pack rats or mice, then the rattlesnake is a good thing.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the problem with rattlesnakes, of course, is that they're venomous. So, you know, if you had a snake in your backyard and you were hoping it might eat some of your pack rats, mm-hmm. might be better to have a gopher snake than a rattlesnake.
Right. Because you don't want to get a dog.
Yeah, that's right. But you don't want to get bit by a rattlesnake, but you shouldn't kill them either. There's really no reason to do that. Most of the time, if there was one there, you'd go in your house and come back, you know, the next morning or even a few hours later, and it'd probably be gone.
See, but there's the question. There's the question I have. Where we live, where my family and I live, we live on the east side of town.
Mm-hmm.
And you see snakes all the time. But how do you know if that little guy has left you or is just kind of hiding around the corner under a planter? I mean, how do you know? Are there things that we can do to try to keep the snakes away from our homes? You know, are there proven things? I mean, earlier you were telling me that you're in Oro Valley doing some projects. What do you guys got going up there? Are you trying to figure that kind of stuff out?
Yeah, well, we're not really trying to figure out how to keep them away from your home, although there are some recommendations for how to do that.
What are those?
There's actually some really solid recommendations by the Tucson Herpetological Society, which is there's a lot of these regional herpetological societies where people who are, you know, fond of reptiles get together, and some of them are really focused on collecting and that kind of thing. And might even have sort of a negative influence, I guess you could say, but the Tucson Herpetological Society is actually a really great organization, and it's totally dedicated to conservation, and they do education and outreach.
Great.
And so they have a pamphlet that it's called Living with Rattlesnakes. I think there's one Living with Gila Monsters, or they're both together or something like that.
Okay.
Living with Venomous Reptiles, probably. And you would get the same kind of information from that you would a place like the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum, where they have really good solid advice on how to deal with that and how to keep animals, snakes away from your yard. And, you know, having your wall, making sure that where you have drainage going through your wall, that you have something there like some wire
to keep them from sneaking.
Yeah, making sure that the wire is very small gauge, or so a snake doesn't get stuck in it. That's one of the things you see pretty often, is people will put chicken wire around their plants and stuff to keep deer or whatever away from them. And a snake can actually get stuck in that. And if they get stuck and they get in the sun, then they'll cook, basically.
Right.
Yeah, they don't last too long. But so there are some practical ways. But the main thing you can do is just keep an eye out and be careful. You know, watch where you step. Take your flashlight out with you at night. Wear your shoes, you know.
Keep the dogs in.
Keep the dogs in. Yeah, some pretty minor things in order to be able to coexist with these animals.
And that is pretty minor. I mean, that's not, we're not asking folks to do something, you know, crazy.
No. And if they do have one and you have some kids there and the animal's hanging around, you can call the fire department. They'll come get it. And the problem with that is translocation of the animals, moving them somewhere else, is actually not a good idea unless you only move them a very short distance.
What's a short distance?
Well, just over the fence or within a couple hundred meters or yards or whatever. You know, you don't want to move them a couple miles away. There's been studies that show that when you translocate rattlesnakes out of what their home range area is, they don't do well. They try to find their way back home.
And how big is their hunting ground, I guess?
That varies by species.
Okay.
They actually call it a home range.
Home range.
And with the species that I've been studying intensively around here, which is called the tiger rattlesnake, it's a little smaller snake.
Smaller being?
It's about, let's see, I think in centimeters, so it's about 2.5 feet long or so, something like that. That'd be the adult, yeah.
Okay.
And then, of course, the diamondbacks can get clear up to like 5 feet long.
They can be huge,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And they have a bigger home range as well. But, you know, we're talking something like with tiger rattlesnakes, the males maybe 15, 16 hectares. And a hectare is 2.2 acres.
Oh, because it's a bit.
Yeah, they move around quite a bit, actually. And they have places in their home range where they know exactly where they're at. They go there year after year after year.
How do they know that?
Well, it's probably mediated or whatever through their different senses. Like they have chemoreception, so they can smell their way around. They also can probably see new sites or sites where they've been before. They may have navigation by celestial cue orientation.
Really?
Yeah. So they have a lot of different ways of finding their way around, and they're really good at that, and they know exactly where they're at. And so when you take one out of their home range, they get confused, and they show a aberrant movement patterns.
So is there a basic number of snakes, and let's just use your tiger rattlesnakes, what's the basic number of tiger rattlesnakes that would be in a 2.5 acre area? A
healthy population.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, because if a mama has a bunch of babies, they all, what happens? I mean, where do they go?
We don't know much about the babies because you can't follow them around with radio transmitters. So it's a really good question. I'm trying to get at it using some genetic data to see how closely related they are, individuals are within a population. So that's one way you can sort of look at it. But they show pretty much complete overlap in their home ranges. So
Really? They're
not territorial. The males do fight, but they fight over females. That ritualistic snake combat dance you've probably seen.
Like the cobra?
King cobras do as well. They have now you might be confusing that with their defensive behavior, where they hood up.
Right.
That's a defensive behavior.
Okay.
But snakes, like tiger rattlesnakes and other rattlesnakes around here, they do this sort of thing where they coil around each other and they try to push each other down.
Got it.
It's pretty cool. They don't even engage. They don't engage their fangs in it at all. It's just very. It's real ritualistic. But when they're doing that, you can be sure that there's a female watching. And it's kind of like, you know, two guys arm wrestling in the bar, you know?
Right.
But And sometimes it's sort of hard for us to tell who wins, but the female must be able to.
She knows.
Yeah, the male's driven off, and then they mate. But, yeah, so it's hard to say how many would be. I forget how much space, amount of space you said, but there's overlap. And there are some areas in, where some species are extremely abundant, and you can find 8 or 10 of them in a night.
Wow.
You know, looking around. And
what species would that be? Would that be more?
Tiger rattlesnakes are like that. They're a foothills animal. They really like the foothills of the mountain ranges around here. And if you get the right habitat with a lot of rocks and stuff, you'll find them. They're all throughout the foothills of the Rincons, Catalinas, Tortolitas, Tucson Mountains. So one of the things about tiger rattlesnakes, because they are such rock dwellers, that, and they do not go out into the valley bottom much, mm-hmm. and they also don't go up much higher than, let's say, about 5,000 feet or so, that they're getting more and more isolated due to human activity. Hmm. And they're already sort of naturally isolated because the Sky Islands are, you know, the mountains around here are right. naturally isolated.
Right. Right.
But because of all the roads and development and stuff like that, the snakes are kind of getting pushed around, especially since humans really like, you know, those foothills environments as well.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And it's so beautiful, you know, with the saguaros and the Palo sure. Verde and stuff. And so that's one of the things we've been studying out in Oro Valley is looking at how development, how they deal with development.
And how are they dealing with development?
Well, it's an interesting story. The snakes are actually... In the area where we're at, there's a golf course, and the golf, because they...
Now, wait a second. You mean to tell me you have found a golf course in Tucson, Arizona?
Yeah.
There's only like 90 of them here,
that's
right?
Yeah, I think there are over 50 or
yeah,
something
there's a
like
bunch.
That. You know, golf courses are kind of interesting. I think they're if you look at some, it's sort of serendipitous, I know, that I started studying effects of golf courses on reptiles and things, but... if you look in the UK and Northern Europe and even the Eastern United States, where a lot of the habitat has now been developed mm-hmm. and is occupied by humans, golf courses can actually be biodiversity hotspots.
Really?
Yeah. Now, they're not as good as probably what it was before. There was
the
nobody there.
Right.
Yeah. They're not as good as the natural environment, but they're better than like a housing development where they just graded the thing, you
well,
know?
Sure.
Yeah. And well, so it's they're kind of an interesting example of possible example of sort of reconciliation ecology, which is a term that is used by a guy named Mike Rosenzweig, who's a scientist at the University of Arizona and who I have the pleasure of working with. And it's sort of this idea that, you know, whatever the habitat or whatever the environment is like, even if there are people living there, we should do our best to coexist with the animals
sure.
that live there.
Absolutely.
Now, that doesn't mean we don't want to have intact habitat where there's no people. We want that. We want pristine areas. They're critical. But we also want to try to do the best we can where people are living as well. And, you know, actually, we're going all over the place here. I'm just kind of riffing.
No, no, that's okay, but let's get back to before
Jeff's questions are riffing.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You say something, and I'm like 1,000 questions. But, okay, so you're doing a study up in Oro Valley by a golf course. And what's going on up there? What are you learning?
Okay, so it looks like for tiger rattlesnakes mm-hmm. in particular that we have really intensive telemetry data on, and we've tracked literally over 100 animals, and we've located them over 10,000 times there.
Wow.
And it looks like the ones that are associated with the golf course, because of the irrigation, it's like a permanent sort of riparian habitat, if you know what I mean. It's like going along a stream bottom.
Sure.
Because there's so much trees
water.
And vegetation right. and therefore rodents and seeds, you know, that attract rodents. But anyway, they're actually bigger on the golf course, and they're actually they're actually having more babies.
Well, but that makes total sense.
It does make total sense.
There's a food supply.
Sure, there's plenty of water.
Right.
You know, where else are all the rodents going to go but where it's nice and lush?
Right.
And then the snakes follow.
Exactly.
But here's
I'm not recommending that we go out and put golf courses everywhere.
No. But here's my question. How long have you guys been doing this study?
Since 1997.
Okay.
Very long
Since
term.
Since 1997, how many incidents have you had out there with snakes?
Well, we've been on the golf course since 2002, so I've been studying tiger rattlesnakes since 97, but we've had very few. Here's the problem, or the potential problem. Here's my prediction, let's put it that way.
Okay.
Right now, the golf course is sort of like a boon to the animals, and part of the reason why that is because the development is still in its earlier stages. Mm-hmm. It's not full of people yet. There may be about 150 houses there, maybe a few more. They're very high-end houses, multi-million dollar houses. They have a lot of land around them. They're only used, most of them are only occupied in the winter when mm-hmm. the snakes are underground hibernating. It's got sort of all the odds stacked up in its favor to be able to persist. But unfortunately, as you get more and more people in an area and you get more and more traffic on the roads, and I think roads are actually one of the really big issues. But
because the snakes go on the roads to warm up in the morning and poof, yeah, they get run over.
Or they just crossing them or whatever. Snakes get run over on the roads a lot.
Okay.
And so the question is, will the increased productivity of the golf course be able to be maintained as mortality increases? Human-caused mortality. We found more and more snakes there that have been, you know, they're missing their head and their rattle.
Right.
You know? I don't know any natural process that can result in that. Although a guy told me once if they go high enough elevation, their head will explode. But but anyway.
That must have been an ASU scientist, right?
That was actually in Wyoming.
Oh,
yeah. But, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
that was funny.
ASU.
You got to get a dig to our friends indeed. Up in the north anyway.
Yeah, there's actually, I got a couple friends up there who study snakes, so. Yeah.
So we got a couple minutes left.
Now, during the break, you said, you know, every year at this time of year, the big newspaper article comes out about, you know, snake season now. And so let's talk a little bit about myth versus fact, because we want people to walk away knowing.
Sure. Hold on. And before we do that, we got to give away some roses from our friends at Mayfield's Florist.
Yes, we do. You have a question?
I have a question.
All right.
And that question is, and you got to be the second caller because this is such low-hanging fruit. What type of rattlesnake does Matt study here in Tucson? We know it's in Oro Valley. We know there's a ton of them. What's the kind of rattlesnake that he studies? The number's 529-3508. The second caller with the right answer gets the roses from Mayfield's Florist. So, tell us more about these tiger rattlesnakes.
I forgot. Where were we? Well, I want those roses, man. No.
Well, you know, we were talking about the myth that the papers come out and you know, all what you sort of regard as, you know,
bad
questionable.
There's so many myths associated with snakes in general and rattlesnakes in particular.
Give us the top two.
Well, there's one that if you cut their head off, the head will grow a new body, and the body will grow a new head.
Oh, Lord.
So that one's actually true, so don't cut their heads off. No, I'm just
No, it's not.
It'd be kind of cool if it was, though.
Yeesh.
But, yeah, that's one. Man, there's so many of them that they'll bite their tail and roll down a hill after you.
No, these are like cartoon kind of myths.
Yeah, and people are really superstitious about snakes. Snakes are so interesting to people in different kinds of ways. They're just so different than we are. You know, they don't have any appendages. They're also, you know, let's not forget that it was a snake that was in the Garden of Eden, right?
We've all got a grudge against them, right?
So there's some of that stuff that sort of look at it is really prevalent, you know.
Well, Matt, listen, I want to thank you for being on the Fred Jeff Show today.
Oh, my pleasure. I enjoyed it.
You were great, and you are one of the guys that makes living in Tucson a great place to live. Keep up the good work. You got any snake updates in the future, send it to us. We're posting the show on our website tomorrow. So, folks, if you missed part of it, you can hear it on friendjeff.com. And thanks to our sponsors, and have a great week, Tucson.
Good evening, Tucson.
Adios, muchachos, compañeros de mi vida, barra querida de aquellos tiempos. Me toca a mí hoy emprender la retirada.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Andrew Spencer.